49. One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation the highest perfectional stage of freedom from reaction. O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage, Brahman, the stage of highest knowledge, by acting in the way I shall now summarize. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind, and power of speech, who is always in trance and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger, and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship, and peaceful, such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed towards every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. One can understand me as I am, as the supreme personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. And so we're going up through these stages coming to this transcendental platform, being situated in Brahman, and now he's saying that only by being fully absorbed in him all the time, then you can attain to the spiritual realm. Right? In other words, you can only know Krishna through devotion. Means you can come to the level of that transcendental position, understanding Brahman, Paramatma, even without devotion. But you can't come to the platform of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead without devotion. Though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee, under my protection, reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace, right? By my protection, because others will say, oh, he's doing so many things, how is that perfect? Like yesterday, so many questions on how could somebody in one position do something that seemingly is another in that. And then when we discuss, there's the principle that's in place, then if that's being followed, then what else, what's the environment that will be, only secondary or supportive? In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction. But compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities, who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. O Skyan of Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. Thus I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential. Deliberate on this fully, and then do as you wish to do. Right? Krishna 4.4 was pointing out simply what would happen. Right? He's not upset, he's not angry. Right, so this concept, you do something wrong, God's very angry, and so therefore the reaction and everything. No, he's just pointing out this is what happens. Right? It's not a matter of anything else. Because you are my dear friend, I'm speaking to you and my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for it is for your benefit. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. Verses 49 to 66 from Jnana Yoga to Pure Devotional Service. Verses 49 to 55 from Jnana Yoga to Brahma-Bhuta. Self-controlled and unattached, disregarding all material enjoyments. Disregarding means that one is... In a situation... The tendency is to look for how one can get a benefit from that, how one can get some enjoyment out of that situation. It doesn't mean, disregarding material enjoyments does not mean you're not in that situation. Right? It means you don't bother with looking for how you can enjoy in that situation. You simply see what you're supposed to be doing as service to Krishna. Does that make sense? Of course, if you are looking for sense gratification, so therefore you put yourself in a particular situation, that's something different, because that's then you're regarding material. But what we're saying is just in the normal course, one is definitely that's not done. But in the regular course of one's activities, whatever opportunities are there for material enjoyment, that's not taken. It's just engaged in the Lord's service. Right? If it's engaged in the Lord's service, that's devotional service. It's not sense gratification. Right? Because devotional service means the senses are being engaged in the service of the Lord of the senses. So it's not the problem's not the senses. The problem is that if they're being used to please yourself or being used to please Krishna. That's the difference. Right? So disregarding doesn't mean that one doesn't do one's duties. It doesn't mean the senses aren't engaged. It means that they're engaged exclusively for Krishna. One who practices renunciation obtains the highest stage of freedom from reaction. Renunciation means that the result is given to Krishna. That was the point that was made before. Sannyas means... The activity is done already for Krishna. Renunciation means it's done and the result is given to Krishna. In any case, the principle of Naishkarmya is there. Right? So one who practices this Naishkarmya element, he attains freedom from the highest freedom from reaction. Otherwise, you can do pious activities, you don't get a bad reaction, but still you're getting a reaction. So you want to become freed from all reaction, good and bad. This verse refers to a yogi who has purified his consciousness through work and has thus progressed from the stage of karma to the stage of jnana. Thus, this purifying work was described in verses 41 to 48 as worshipping the Lord through the performance of one's occupational duties. Activity is always being performed, but... It's a question of whether you're doing a broader range of activities according to one's conditioned state, especially if that's the area you're comfortable in. Right? So engagement of that in the Lord's service, that's karma yoga. Jnana yoga means you're looking at the world specifically through the eyes of knowledge of the shastra, and then you're doing that much activity that is required, you know, to be able to do that. Does that make sense? So, if that means you're performing your duties as you would regularly be doing, but the focus is not in your consciousness specifically on the work, it's on the functioning of that work in connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? The results for Krishna. Now, you can focus on doing it and getting absorbed in that the work itself, or in what... technically is going on in the universe with the modes of nature, the movements of that, the field of activities, the living entity, the Lord, the consciousness, and that aspect is more prominent. That's Jnana Yoga. Does that make sense? Or it's a combination of that, that's Buddhi Yoga. But by that, one comes to this purified state where then he's not looking for the enjoyment, so that means the fruitive element's gone. Right? So then, yeah. And then whatever he's, the results of whatever he does, that's for Krishna. Okay. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains, having worshipped Hari by one's prescribed actions and consequently having obtained renunciation of all actions, one attains the level of meditation on Atma through the mercy of the Lord. Right? So here we're seeing that what's described in the first chapters, that by performing the karma yoga properly with proper knowledge, that brings you to the platform of jnana. And then from there, it brings you into the platform of meditation. Right? So one is able to always be absorbed in the Lord at all times. It doesn't mean activity is not going on. It doesn't mean knowledge is not there. It's where the focus is. Right? It's always about the focus. Because when we say in Krishna consciousness, what does that mean? It's the focus. Right? There's activities that are best supportive of that focus. But it's the focus that makes it Krishna conscious. Right? Means the activities we do as our morning sadhana and all that, basically anybody who's following the Vedas in any kind of, you know, standard way does exactly the same things. They may sing a different song, they may have a different deity, but it's exactly the same thing. So what makes it devotion? Because it's being done for Krishna, we're conscious of Krishna. On attaining this perfection, one should adopt the following process given by Krishna for obtaining the stage of highest knowledge and supreme perfection. One must, one, be purified by one's intelligence. Right? So through intelligence, one's purifying yourself. Of course, we're practicing all other elements that are purifying. The association with the devotees, you know, bathing in the Ganga, attending, you know, the temple programs, taking our bath, living in a clean environment, performing, eating clean food, all these different elements. But it's the knowledge that it's, how you say, through intelligence that's important. Because then you actually understand what's going on. Because you have to be able to separate yourself from the material energy. You don't make that distinction, then one can get into trouble. Right? Because karma yoga, then the activities are being connected. But if the knowledge is not solid, one may get sentimental. One may not make the distinction. Does that make sense? So by knowledge, you can tell the difference between what is matter and what is spirit. Right? That's the whole science. What's matter and what's spirit? So how to engage oneself on that platform of spirit. Right? So that means, in our position, engaging matter in the service of spirit. Right? Two, control the mind with determination. We must be focused, firm. Remember, weakness of heart. If there's weakness of heart, there won't be any determination. Right? So this weakness of heart has two stages. One, the initial stage is that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? Then from that, we try to engage that by interacting with the material energy in various ways to control and enjoy. And then by doing that, we get attached to the specific environment or specific activities that we're involved in. Does that make sense? So that's the next one. So that determination means we should be focusing, you know, specifically on that I'm not the controller and enjoyer, I'm servant of Krishna. If that's removed, then the second one doesn't exist. But because of habit, we're so accustomed to that. So we also focus on that. So we control the mind there to keep it from being involved in these secondary aspects of weakness of heart. Right? Same, you know, and with knowledge, then we're situating ourselves by trying to remove with determination that first weakness of heart.
Right? Then I'm not the controller and enjoyer.
Three, give up objects of sense gratification. You know, as we mentioned, it just means they're engaged in the Lord's service. If there are duties, they're involved, that environment we're in, they're just engaged in the Lord's service. If they're not our duty, well, we don't get involved. But if they are, there's not a problem. We're involved in Krishna's service. Four, to be free from attachment and hatred. Right? If one's attached, there'll be hatred. Right? Because what you're hatred is those things that get in the way of your attachment. That's all. Those things that create obstacles or remove the opportunity to engage in one's attachment, that's where the hatred is. So if there's no attachment, there's no hatred. Right? So an attachment means that it's for myself. If it's for Krishna, results for Krishna. Right? Because attachment's in the position of prayojana. Right? It means in goal. So if the goal is to please Krishna, there's no attachment. So what happens is the attachment develops towards Krishna rather than for us being the enjoyer. Okay. Five, live in secluded place means you live where it's favorable to do your service. So in the secluded place doesn't mean we're out in the middle of the forest. Right? His devotees may complain that, oh, we're, you know, right in the middle of the city and this, we should be out farther. So then we go out and make some nice community someplace and turn it into a suburb. Right? Nobody lives out in the forest. We don't have any community in the world that lives out in the forest. They're all suburbs. Right? Basically. Why? Because we're urban people. So it's just by habit we do that. So, therefore, if that was the point, then how would it be done? Right? How does everybody just pack up, go to the forest? Because that's what Arjuna wants to do, right? He wants to go to the forest. And Krishna's saying, no, you're going to fight anyway. You're a Kshatriya. So, live in a secluded place means you're secluding yourself from being in an environment to take advantage of the senses. Right? Because you have your situation. And whatever, it's favorable, you're associating with devotees, you're able to do your service. So if one stays within that environment, that's secluded. Right? But if that doesn't, you're not inspired in that, you need to have some, inspiration coming in the way of, you know, material, the material enjoyment, then one has to go out. Does that make sense? So that's why it means people could stay at their house, but they have to go down to the nightclub or go out to, you know, somewhere else or go to something else because they're bored. Right? And why are they bored? Because sense gratification is boring. Right? So you create enough variety, then one can maintain the illusion, maybe I'm going to get something from this. Right? Well, I didn't get it from this, so let's try skiing. Okay, I broke my leg. Let's try, parachuting. Okay, that didn't work. Okay, let's try bungee diving. Okay, that didn't work. Let's try some other extreme sport. No, okay, that didn't work. Why don't we try, mahjong? Right, like that. You know, we just keep trying different things to get around. Like this, that okay, this will work. That's the mental speculation. So when we're trying to enjoy the material energy, then we tend to put ourselves in those situations that create that. So when we don't, then you're living in the secluded environment. What is secluded? You're just involved in an environment of Krishna consciousness. So that can be in the middle of the city, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would have the devotees do. Right? You want to start a temple? Go right in the middle of it, wherever is the most activity, because that's where they are looking for sense gratification. So if you're there giving Krishna consciousness, then that's the process. Right? It means always remember Krishna, you're nicely engaged in direct activity serving Krishna. Right? Never forget him. What does that mean? You're taking the indirect activities that are distracting you from Krishna and connecting them to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So So that's taking you away. That's where you're forgetting. So if you go right into the middle of where everybody's, that's where they're trying to improve their material happiness. That's where their main distraction is, right? Because there's no question of them engaging directly in service to the Lord. That's not happening, right? So they're forgetting Krishna, right? There's no activity to remember. So you go to that place where they're forgetting, and then there give Krishna conscious, so you're connecting it to Krishna. You understand? So it's the same process. Then they'll start to engage directly in Krishna service. Then in their own Krishna consciousness, those areas that are not, they, how you say, not engaged, those they'll analyze and slowly pull them all in. Right? Does that make sense? Then you're in a secluded place. Because secluded means you're only doing devotional service. You're only in proper association. You're only in, does that make sense? It doesn't mean, oh, I'm at my job, or I'm riding the, you know, the fast train to Tokyo, or doesn't mean that. That doesn't mean, oh, I'm out in the middle of everything. No, it means if you're sitting on that train, you're thinking of Krishna. You're secluded. Right? When you walk down the street in a dhoti or a sari, you're secluded. Why? Because everyone doesn't look at you with the what do you call it? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, what do you call it? The analytical gate, no, the sensual gaze of inspection. Right? Means the karmis, that's what they're doing. Anything that comes along, they're trying to see, can I get sense gratification out of this? Right? Some way. You know, by looking at you, is there something to enjoy? You look good, you smell good, something's happening, they like your attitude. Or it's a matter of social prestige. Hey, how are they dressed? Am I dressed better? Or are they dressed cool? You know, where can I get that? What shop did they get that from? You know what I'm saying? This is what they're doing. So when you dress in their clothes, that's what happens to you. And somehow the devotees call that being more comfortable. You know, I'm not exactly sure how it's comfortable, but whatever it is, they like it. But if you wear the others, then they're looking at you differently. So what is it that's not appreciated? Because I'm secluded. They think I'm weird. Great. Then they'll leave me alone. Right? And then you're weird, so what are you doing that's different? And you're happy. You know? I'm up to date. I'm in anxiety. You're weird. You're happy. What's going on here? You know? I got all the clothes. I'm doing all the right thing. You know, I got all the gadgets. Why is it I'm not happy and this weirdo is happy? You know? I just spent, you know, $100 on the hair. You know, I just spent, you know, $100 on that perfume. This and that, all this stuff. You know, I'm walking around. You know, you're looking at, you know, $1,500 of jazz here. And I'm not happy. This guy's got a bald head and is wearing bed sheets. Why is he happy? What's wrong here? You understand? You're secluded. So secluded means you're thinking of Krishna. You're absorbed in Krishna. You're not involved in the material environment of sense gratification. You understand? Does that make sense? And in this, don't bring up, no, but what if you're in an environment, we're not talking about that. We're talking about your mentality while you're wearing it. Right? You go to work, they don't want you to wear your dhoti, they expect you to wear a suit. Wear a suit. But you're thinking of Krishna, so you're still secluded. You know, it just means people are going to look at you soon. That's all. You know, that's all. And if it's not up to date, they'll think it's weird, like a dhoti. Okay, six. Eat little, control the body, mind, and power of speech. So eat little means eat only what you need. Don't eat beyond that. You need to eat like an elephant. If you're an elephant, you eat like one. Right? You're not an elephant, don't eat like one. Right? You eat how much you need. Control the body so it's always engaged in Krishna's service. The mind, you know, so as we said before, is that that's always absorbed in accepting those things that are connected to Krishna, rejecting those things that are not connected to Krishna. Right? Seeing Krishna as one's shelter, as one's maintainer. Right? Having that, identifying oneself as a devotee. Right, being meek and humble, this way the mind is there, and the power of speech, that the speech is always about Krishna.
or in connection to Krishna. It's controlled. It's according to Shastra. It's according to authority. Like that. Seven, always be in trance. So always be absorbed in Krishna. Like that. Whatever it is. However you're seeing Krishna. Whatever, in whatever way one can is authorized by Krishna here in the Gita. Eight, be detached means the result is not for us. So we're going to get that result. We're going to work till we get it. But we're not attached to getting it. Right? It's for Krishna. The reason we want it working so hard is for Krishna. Right? You have a friend, it's, you know, some special occasion for them, and so you work very hard to make it nice for them. There's many obstacles, you work them out. But you're not attached to the result for yourself. You're attached to get a nice result for them. Right? That's different. But you're not attached, oh, I can't get this, I'm working for them and it's not working out, this, what's going on here. No, it's a matter of it's for them, you keep doing it until you get it. Because if otherwise you get frustrated, it means you're attached to getting a nice result for them. No, the result's for Krishna, so you're going to work for it until you get it. So there's no attachment. It's simply to please Krishna. Because otherwise, I'm doing all this for Krishna. You know why it's not working out? You know, I've collected, you know, $500,000 for the temple and nobody cares what's my position. I'm the senior man here and nobody's respecting. I have no facility. These young punks, the temple president. Heard this one before? Right? Okay, so all these different things, these going... What's that? That's attachment, the result. No, it's for Krishna, but, you know, I should get recognized for it. Or I should get some facility for it. You know, or I give this to them and they'll be so happy. You know, and I'll get to see that. You know what I'm saying? So, it's still attachment. It's a nicer form of attachment. Right? You're attached and the other person's happy. But you want to be happy seeing that they're happy by your work. You understand?
Pranamoy.
Yeah, it's pranamoy. But it may even be, yeah, it's pranamoy. Like that. Might be a bit, I'll have the element of the dharma that I've done it for them, it's my, and I feel good that I did this, you know, I did this work that I'm supposed to do. You know, I accomplished it, there's that sense. So you can have that mix also.
Like the lower level of manamoy?
No, I mean, it means manamoy is there, you're following the religious principles, but, you know, you see the nature, but you still want to get something from that. Just like, it's not a matter of lower, anything below bhakti is already lower. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha already is lower, you know, like that, you know. And then you have lower of lower, higher of higher, higher of lower, you know, like that. So, how you say it? So, just like moksha, then that, it can be for yourself, or it can simply be to get out of material entanglement so you can always be absorbed in Krishna. Nine, be free from false ego. One doesn't think, I'm the doer. Right? I'm this instrument, I'm the servant. And so, by Krishna's authority, the modes of nature are carrying it out, I am simply an instrument in that. And so, that carrying out of the activities under Krishna's sanction by the modes is being connected to Krishna, not to myself. Right? And I'm thinking, when the result comes, I'm not the one, because I'm the instrument. The spoon can't say, yeah, I cooked a great subject. You know, I was a little tough there, you know, things got stuck on the bottom there, you know, the hand was not quite, you know, up to the mark, but, you know, we got it done there, so it was great. Yeah, so it's not, that's not how it works. 10. To be free from false proprietorship and peaceful for elevation of the position of self-realization. Free from false proprietorship, because it's not ours, it's Krishna's. So true proprietorship means it belongs to Krishna, and it may be your quota. So therefore, you know, your quota is for your service, you'll guard it. Right? Means, you know, you're in the kitchen and you have these things, you're supposed to cook them. So you're going to keep your eye out so the guy next to you doesn't take half of it because he wants to put it in his preparation. Right? Because, you know, this is your quota for serving Krishna. And he wants his quota, then get it. You know? Does that make sense? It's not sentiment, but it's not yours. You understand? This is where the balance is. We're always, it's got to be this or it's got to be that. These two give us nice material taste. No, it's a combination of it where it doesn't have anything to do with our sense gratification or our position or false ego. You know? Very unique. It's something very different. That's why this is the conclusion of the Gita. You've situated yourself. You're doing all the same activities you'd be doing before, but it's all being connected with Krishna. You're not thinking you're the doer and the result's not for you, for Krishna's pleasure. You're always absorbed in Krishna rather than how I'm going to enjoy, how I'm great, how I'm special. So this is now bringing everything together. And peaceful. So, as we see in all these different things, if one's there, the other's there, but these are different elements how you can attack it. If I'm not peaceful, why? Because I think I'm the proprietor. And things don't go the way I want, so I'm in anxiety. So if you understand, okay, if I'm supposed to be peaceful, why is that? Because I have the sense of proprietorship. Right? The proprietorship, because I'm the controller and enjoyer. That means the false ego's there. So then you have to analyze that. So then you have to use the intelligence. Right? Then that means if I'm not all this, if I'm not the doer and all that, the results aren't mine. Right? And it means I'm not the one actually doing it. The modes of nature are doing it. Right? Does this make sense? So each one you can get at the other. So this is the field, right? We want to know what the field is in self-realization. This is the field. Right? And then each of these elements has so much detail. Right? We have 17 chapters describing this. So this is now bringing it all together in conclusion. Right? Second chapter is saying there's the soul and there's material energy. And if you absorb yourself in the material energy, you'll suffer. You understand the soul is separate from that. Now there's matter and spirit. Everything works very nicely. So here again, now the element of matter and spirit, but the conclusion is it's being brought to the Supreme Person, devotion. Right? And in between is all the details of what does that mean? What is matter? What is spirit? How do they relate? How do you deal? Right? Does that make sense? So the element of sambandha is being very nicely described in the Gita. Yeah, and you're doing that, being free from false proprietorship and peacefulness, for elevation of the position of self-realization, not for something else. Just because free from proprietorship, that's good. The hippies thought, why, it's free, it's everybody's. You know, it didn't matter. But that wasn't for self-realization, right? And being peaceful. Oh, why so angry, should be peaceful. But what's the use of peaceful if it's not connected to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? Deers are very peaceful. You know, they look great, but they're still a deer. Srila Prabhupada describes the results of a yogi's adherence to these practices in his purport. Thus, when he is completely free from false ego, he becomes non-attached to all material things. And that is the stage of self-realization of Brahman. That stage is called the Brahma-Bhuta stage. Right? So when you're free from false ego, then you're going to be not attached. Right? What's the process? I see the field, I see myself connected to that field, and then I'm inspired to do something for myself, so contemplating that, I get attached, so I work for that end result for myself. Right? So that's the material process. I see the field, I see myself as Krishna's servant, and this field is an opportunity instead of for sense gratification, for serving Krishna. I get inspired to do that service. I see what results I can get. I work very hard to get those results for Krishna's pleasure. Right? So if you're free from false ego, everything works. Right? So therefore you can simply say, if you can see the difference between matter and spirit, right? And actually understand we're not the body, we're the soul, we're servant of Krishna, and act on that platform, everything else works. That's the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And as we see Krishna point out, Brahma-Bhuta, from that platform, then it's very easy to get to pure devotion. Because then you can see the personality of Godhead very easily, without any distractions. It means we can see Krishna from any position that we're in, but we're constantly distracted. And then we'll remember again, get distracted, and we'll remember again, get distracted. Right? Then we go to bed, we get up in the morning, then, you know, again, go to the temple, see Krishna, chant, remember Krishna, then go out, get distracted. You know, like that, you know, then remember Krishna, get distracted. You know what I'm saying? So it's going on like this. So the more that false ego and that is removed, the more one is situated on this Brahma-Bhuta, then the more one is naturally able to remember Krishna. Does it make sense? So that's why it's so important. But all these different ways, these are symptoms, and these are different aspects of one's contemplation. The Lord describes the Brahma-Bhuta stage as follows. One who is situated in transcendence realizes Krishna, the supreme Brahman, and becomes fully joyful. It means Brahman is there. You see how the Lord's potency is there in everything, but he is a person, that's supreme Brahman. Right? So all that you see that's going on the Brahman platform, that's coming from the person. So that's the supreme Brahman. Otherwise, you could follow all this and get to the Brahman's platform. But that's, for us, is not Brahma-Bhuta. Because he's actually free from false ego. The impersonalist is not free from false ego. He's free from the second stage of weakness of heart, in that he's attached or identifies with particular aspects of the material manifestation. But he still thinks I'm the controller and enjoyer, right? Because I'm Brahman, I'm God. And I will enjoy Brahmananda. Does that make sense? So that's, but here, this false ego, Brahma-Bhuta, means you've cleared that first stage of weakness of heart. So you think I'm the servant. And on that platform, that's Brahma-Bhuta. Because you see, not Brahman, means you're Brahman, everything else is Brahman, but there's also supreme Brahman. Right? If everything's Brahman, that means, you know, God's also Brahman. So there is supreme Brahman. He never laments, okay. Yeah, becomes fully joyful. Because he sees Lord there. Then there's beyond this again. Right? So Krishna's taking it. There's the material, there one's transcendentally situated. In that position of transcendentally situated, where you have these qualities, then one sees supreme Brahman. Having seen the supreme Brahman, then you can go to see, understand the supreme Brahman as a person who interacts. Right? He never laments or desires to have anything, in a note. Having realized the Swarup, being extremely pure because of departure of desires which mature as karma and suffering. He does not lament for or hanker after anything except me. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary on verse 54. Right? Because the Brahma-Bhuta stage of one situated there fully, that's where one realizes his Swarup. Right? Does that make sense? But the fundamental point of Swarup is, I'm servant of Krishna. That's the principle. A detail is what it is, right? People get too caught up in the detail, but you have to know the principle first. You know what I'm saying? If you don't know arithmetic, it's going to be really hard to figure out your cube roots. You know, like that. So, you know, once you got the numbers, understand these things, then these other aspects work. Does that make sense? No? So, the basic is that we are servant of Krishna. If you're always seeing like that, then something else has meaning. Right? He is equally disposed towards everyone, because everyone's part and parcel of God. God is Brahman, he's the supreme Brahman, so everything is Brahman, so all the living entities are also Brahman, so he's equally disposed towards everyone. Right? They're all part of the Lord, so why discriminate? You deal differently with the different natures, but the souls you don't deal differently with. Right? In other words, you see the soul, you deal with the soul, how the situation that the soul is in, either by his identification. Right? In other words, the identity of the soul and the situation they're in, that's how you deal. So if they see themselves as a devotee, you deal like that. They see themselves as, you know, how you say, President of America, you deal with them like that. You deal with them however they identify with their environment. You know? That makes sense. Yes.
Does this mean going along with like extreme illusion sometimes?
Going along with extreme illusion. You can start from there. You know, the guy thinks he's Napoleon Bonaparte. Okay, you start from there because then you develop a relationship. And then slowly you kind of point out that, aren't you a little tall? What happened to you? Aren't you supposed to be, you know, 5'2" or something? You know? How come you're 6'7"? You know, like that, you know? You know, so you start from there. Point is even Napoleon Bonaparte can chant Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Like that. So everybody is.
Everybody got his hand in his coat.
Yes. Yeah, you'd actually have to shift that. You'd have to put his left hand in. So his right hand would be free to chant. So we'd have to make that
minor
adjustment. Yeah. Like that. But the hat can stay. The hat can stay.
As long as we have a relationship, we can work with it.
Yeah, yeah, like that. But if he wants to be more up to date, I put the point in the back, right? Okay. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, to the impersonalist, achieving the Brahma-Bhuta stage, becoming one with the Absolute is the last word. But for the personalist or pure devotee, one has to go still further to become engaged in pure devotional service. That's why the comments are always being pointed out, is that you have to get to this transcendental stage. Right? And so, you know, in other words, one performs the proper activities, one cultivates the proper knowledge. And so one is situating oneself in transcendence, right? By that practice, then one becomes transcendental. But having become transcendental, that point, even though he says he's, you know, how you say, fully joyful, but the point is that fully joyfulness is only, how you say, talking. It's the natural position of the soul. So it's not special. We take joyful as special. Compared to the material world, yes, it's special. But compared to the nature of the soul, that's just normal. Right? Satchit Ananda. You're just joyful. But the actual dynamic joy is in connection with service to the Supreme Lord. Right? So that's why it said that the materialness of the whole material manifestation is like a drop compared to the ocean of Brahmananda. Right? But the happiness of Brahmananda is just a drop or a fraction of a portion of a drop compared to the unlimited ocean of bhakti. Right? Brahmananda is just said to be an ocean, so that's very vast. No one's going to worry about it. But bhakti is unlimited. It never ends. It just keeps getting better and better. Right? So, the saying that it doesn't get better than this, that's the saying of the material world. Because in the spiritual world, it does. It's the best it can be, and it will get better. That's the thing. Right? So that's why that point is made. Because we could get distracted and think, this is great, I'll stop here. You understand? So that's why it's said. It's not that we're so worried about the impersonalist or this is what you got to say to them. Because how many opportunities have you had to say that to a Mayavadi? Right? Anybody? No. So it's actually for us. I mean, the conversation goes there, you could say it to the Mayavadi, but he probably wouldn't buy it. So, but it's for us so that we don't get stuck at this stage. Right? In other words, Krishna is saying you have to practice the progressive path of self-realization. Right? That itself is, we would say, properly situated. By following that, then one has the knowledge. From following that, one gets all these nice qualities. And by practicing that, one comes to the platform of liberation, the Brahma-Buddha platform. But we have to keep going from there to the point of the pure devotion to Krishna. Yes?
This process seems to be mechanical.
Mechanical?
Yeah, no.
Just like making lunch, it's mechanical. Right? But what makes lunch not mechanical? Okay, you're sitting at home alone, and there's nothing to do today, everyone's gone, and no one's going to show up, nothing's going to happen. Right? Yeah, and so, therefore, okay, no lunch. Okay, let's say that happens for 3 days. At some point, you'll cook, right? Something, you know, or at least open a can of beans. Right? You had to go through that endeavor, right? You know, it took you 3 hours to get it up to, okay, I'll get the can opener, you know, that, you know. So, that's mechanical, right? But now, when everybody's there and family or friends are cooking for the deities or a festival, are the mechanics of cooking there? Right? And the better the mechanics, the better result. But would you call it mechanical? No, because you're cooking for somebody. You understand? So that's the point of this. Self-realization, there's mechanics to do anything, you know? So, do I sense an element of complaint here? The mechanics are going on, where's the mercy? Hello? In other words, don't be secure, because that's what's coming up. Because when you put it into here, then Krishna says he's going to take care. And so you don't have to worry, because someone might worry that, oh well, if I do everything just connected to Krishna, there's so many elements that I probably wouldn't get too involved in. But others will say it's my duty, but technically it's not. My duty is what I actually need to do to engage my nature. It means I can't disregard that, but in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? It means like, Krishna wants Yudhishthira to do the Rajasuya sacrifice, so they go out and collect and do all the things you're supposed to do. But before that, he never does anything like that. Right? So that someone would want to do an Ashwamedha Yajna to, or, you know, for develop their piety or go to the heavenly planets, or that, it's within the duties of a Kshatriya. So if they did it, no one would say, oh, he's being irreligious, he's performing an Ashwamedha Yajna. Right? But the point is, for a devotee, why bother? You know what I'm saying? Because specifically that gives the results of going to heavenly planets. So unless it would benefit his ability to perform things for his service, so if the citizens would expect that, you know, all the kings in their line have always done an Ashwamedha Yajna, and so that's why our kings are the greatest, and therefore we have such respect and such surrender to them, so our king should also do one, then he would do that simply because then it makes his duties go nice. But otherwise, does that make sense? So there may be the element that people, there's things that you know, family, relatives, associates will say you should do. But if you don't do them, because you technically don't need to do them to engage your nature in Krishna's service, and that's, you're not neglecting anything that the Shastra would say would be essential, then Krishna will take care. You don't have to worry. Right? And that you're doing it for Krishna, the reactions and everything that come, they're not coming to you. Does that make sense? So Krishna's pointing that out. So the element is there. The point is the problem's not Krishna's mercy. Right? The problem is us wanting it or calling out by ourselves for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, the man at the job wants the raise. You know, he wants that higher position. But just wanting it is that means it's there. Right? They're looking for qualified people. Right? Every company is looking for qualified people. They have 10,000 people working for them, but they're still looking for those ones that could actually run the whole show. So What's the problem? Is it them? It's us. If we do the work, then the mercy's there. Like, the food is there. And we want the food. What do we have to do? We have to eat it, right? But if we don't make that endeavor, it won't happen. Does that make sense? So in other words, your efforts will be rewarded. Do not, how you say?
In the fear.
Yeah, don't fear about that, but don't, yeah, about that. But don't get insecure that something's going wrong, I'm working so hard, where's the mercy? Does that make sense? Is that okay? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, with the removal of all misconceptions or appearances, upadhi, one attains the state of Brahman, Brahma-Bhuta, by being in a state of uncovered consciousness. Right? All misconceptions or appearances, right? Upadhis means identities. Right? So misconception on how you view it, or you don't misconceive it, you see it properly, but you identify with it. Right? So, in other words, illusory perceptions and illusory identities. All this should be given up. Then one comes to the state of Brahma-Bhuta. Right? Because the soul is pure. The soul is transcendental. The problem is the soul thinks I'm something other than a soul. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the material consciousness. So if you remove that, the misconceptions and or appearances, the upadhis, then you're back on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Right? So then the things that get in the way are all these 10 points that Krishna pointed out before. These are the places to watch to see that you're freeing yourself from misconceptions and appearances. Because of the disappearance of the contamination of the gunas, he is said to be pure, prasanna. And he is the soul, atma. Okay. And because of absence of misconceptions of body, when he loses something, he does not lament. And when he fails to attain something, he does not hanker for it. Na sochati, na kankshati. Because if there's no misconception, it's not there. So if it works, nice. If it doesn't, you don't worry about it. Like an innocent child, he regards all beings as equal, whether good or bad, without looking at the externals. Right? Innocent children, you know, they don't worry. Everybody's nice. As long as their parents were nice, everybody's nice. Right? If their parents were not nice, everybody's not nice. So in either way, they're equal. They have equal vision towards everyone. Right? Like that. So like that is one regards everyone as the soul, not that one can't discern between, proper behavior and not. You know, Narad Muni can tell, you know, Dasaratnakar is a criminal, right? Or that Magrari is a hunter. But because they're a criminal or a hunter, doesn't mean that he's not going to explain to them Krishna consciousness, right? Or there was a king cobra, right? He also explained to him Krishna consciousness. So that doesn't matter. He doesn't make that distinction, right? Like that. But you have to remember is that the king cobras and that, you have to get the ones that, you know, speak Sanskrit and stuff. So then you can talk to them. Because otherwise, the other living entities, then you can talk to them, but they don't like. One time I thought, okay, we're supposed to be equal to all. So I went up, there was a dog, you know, kind of laying there, you know. I went up to it, started preaching philosophy, and it just started looking at me. And then it got up, walked over about 3 or 4 feet, and laid down again. Okay, you know, so it didn't appreciate the
reminder.
Philosophy.
Hmm? The reminder.
Yeah, like that. It's like, I know. With the cessation. With this cessation of jnana, like a fire which dies without fuel, he attains indestructible bhakti for me in the form of hearing, chanting, and other processes arising after the cessation of jnana. This is important because at the Brahma-Bhuta stage, this means in connection to your question, is that at this stage, this jnana is not the point anymore. Because jnana, then you're dealing with the subtle mechanics. Right? It means, in other words, how it's working, and the karma is dealing with making it work. Right? It means one is operating it and one is how it operates. So on the Brahma-Buddha platform, there's no need of one's progress being driven by jnana. Because now you're on the platform of soul, so that's already there. You don't have to, you know what I'm saying? You want to get somewhere when you, and so you use a car or a train or a bus or a boat or a plane, but once you get there, you don't require them anymore because you've gotten there. So that knowledge of these things has already gotten there. And so it said, just like a fire stops when the fuel is empty. So the not empty, but burnt. Yeah, I guess fuel is empty. The material endeavor, material consciousness, material identities, that's the fuel on which jnana is functioning, right? Because what are you analyzing? You know, what you actually are, and so therefore what you're not. So when you've come to the Brahma-Bhuta stage, then that fuel is gone. So there's no fire. You understand? So what's left at that point is bhakti. You know? So that's where the serious mercy happens. Right? But it doesn't mean mercy is not happening before that. But it's just... that makes sense, right? But that's where it gets serious. Attainment of bhakti is through the action of... You're going to like this. Through the action of, it says here, mu... Surup Shakti. Mu is the Buddhist concept of nothingness. It's mu. You know, like that. So I'm not sure what the word is actually supposed to be. Since the person who put it together is not here. So. Ah, very good. He works with him, so now he's figured that he knows what typo you could get. You know, is U next to Y? In the QWERTY?
Yeah.
Okay. So then that's it. Okay. Sorry, got close there, but it wasn't quite. You know. Yeah. Okay. Attainment of bhakti is through the action of my Swarup Shakti, Krishna speaking. Right. So this is all Krishna. Since bhakti alone does not disappear, even with the disappearance of vidya and avidya, being different from the maya shakti, right? So this knowledge about Krishna is transcendental, so it doesn't go away. So even when there's that state of material nothingness, still the devotion remains. So that's the real move. Right? So the Swarup Shakti is contains both the internal and external, right? But the Swarup Shakti interacts with Krishna as the internal potency. She interacts with us as the external potency when we're not connecting with Krishna, right? When we connect with Krishna, she acts as the internal potency. So that remains, because we can say, okay, all this knowledge, and we've had knowledge of all this transcendental elements, so therefore, when the knowledge goes, all that will go. No. The internal elements, the internal understanding, that remains. What's gone is that interaction with the material energy. That's what ceases. It is called param because it is far superior to jnana, remaining after the disappearance of nishkam karma. Jnana and nishkam karma, jnana and other processes, it surpasses all others and it is pure. So the karma, jnana, and this meditation. So the devotional service, bhakti, that remains. So it's beyond these processes. So when we're describing in the early chapters of Gita, we're describing how those processes are connected to Krishna, because they can be followed and not connected to Krishna. Right? The karmi, it's not connected to Krishna. Right? The jnani, it's not connected to Krishna. The yogi, it's not necessarily connected. He sees paramatma, but at the end he's not actually worried about developing a relationship. Right? So those processes, then those are what one uses to elevate oneself. Because it engages the body, karma, the mind, jnana, and the words, jnana. Right? So when we say body, mind, and words must be engaged, these are the three processes that engage each one of them. So it's not, so, which is prominent, if the body's prominent in your dealings, then it's karma yoga. If the jnana, the intelligence is prominent in your field, then that's jnana yoga. If the mind is prominent, it's jnana yoga. You understand? So, it'll work like that. But bhakti is still beyond these processes that one used to elevate oneself to the transcendental platform. But in doing that, it's not that the processes of engaging the body, mind, and words go away. They just don't need to be engaged to these mechanical processes. Because you're already transcendental. The mechanics gets you out of the material world. But because you're in the material world, then that is what drives it. Once you're out of the material world, what drives those activities is gone. So they also disappear. Like fire disappears when the wood that was burning from turns to ash. Understand? So you see it, the where you can see where the impersonalists, you know, the Buddhists, then they get all these different elements where they'll say, yes, it just goes and it's like the flame goes out, or yeah, it just, you know, everything disappears, or they're getting it from this, but they don't understand when that does happen, which is true. Bhakti's still there, you're still there, God's still there, the whole spiritual world's still there. This is the point. So in other words, you understand these things, is then you can see where they're actually going wrong. Much of what they're describing in process is not wrong. That's why we say, oh yes, you know, we're having this yoga thing and, you know, all these people are there and they're so much interested in, you know, being vegetarian, and, you know, they're very peaceful and nice, and, you know, they're very kind, and, you know, they're interested in spiritual process. They like hearing about the Gita, and they like, you know, doing some, you know, little something like that. They do the yoga and all that. They like to meditate. So it all sounds really good. And the devotee may be enamored that, yes, see, they're so nice. They're so good. They're so much far superior than, you know, other people. But the point is why are they doing those things? You know, if they come to the point where they're always peaceful, is Krishna going to remain? Or they perfect their work or anything else, is Krishna going to remain? No, they're not even going to get there. So that's where the weakness is. So the process, these are our processes that are given by God. All the elements of anything that elevates anyone, anywhere, in any situation, that's given by God. But the point is if it's not connected to Him, then you don't have anything to continue with once you get to whatever is your goal. The point is bhakti is the process, bhakti is the goal. You know, that's how we have it, because the material world you don't have like that. The name is the process, the name is the goal. Right? But there it remained, because the activity, it remained. Krishna is always eternal. So every aspect is Krishna. So whatever you're dealing with, what remains is Krishna. So everything coming from Krishna is perfect and complete. And what remains is perfect and complete. Does that make sense? So if one can distinguish these things, then one can preach to anyone. These are the real secrets to preaching to this particular community. Is you can see what they can't see. Just get in there and feel good, the jargon and all this, and, you know, and all that. Nice. But the point is what's the actual purpose of all that? That's what can be taught. Remaining after the disappearance of nishkam karma, jnana, and any other process, it surpasses all others, and it is pure. Thus, param is equal to the word kevalam. Right? So kevalam means, you know, it doesn't have any tinge of anything else. Though bhakti was previously present in small proportion during practices like jnana and vairagya, just in order to bring about liberation, bhakti was not clearly visible.
just like the Supersoul, the Antaryami, in all beings is not visible. Therefore, the word attains, labhate, is the suitable word rather than produces, since it was already present within that person. Right? So here's another important point, is that if we think I'm the doer, then I will think because of my practices I've produced bhakti. Right? So we see is all these points, they pervade everything. So it's not about, oh, that's here. It only applies here. And then we have this other situation. No, they're all pervading. Krishna is all pervading, so everything about this will be. So bhakti is always there. So we're starting, then that devotional service is there, but it's hidden. Just like Supersoul, he's there, but we can't see. So the person takes prasad, they don't even know what it is. The bhakti is there, but it's unseen. Right? As they get knowledge in that, then something is there, more is there. But when one comes to the transcendental platform, then it's fully there. Right? So it wasn't produced. It's simply one attains it. Right? I say. So one.
Law of attraction.
Law of attraction, yeah. I was thinking of another one that one, you know. In other words, it was always there, but one's by one's qualification, one rises to the platform to be able to accept it. Mm. Like that? Isn't that? You have a word, that's how you get your.
Is it you
get the passport? What's that called? You rise to the platform of.
Aliyah.
Aliyah, yes. Yes, it's like that. Yes. Ah, okay. And then, you know, expats, you kind of like went down the other side, right? Okay, you understand? So this thing of I'm the doer, if you have it now, is no, I did it and I should be recognized. And the problem is then I created the bhakti. And if you created the bhakti, then we didn't. So why it will manifest? Why? How will we attain it? You know what I'm saying? So we won't be able to see what's already there. Right? It means like here, the Dham is here. It's not that by our service, then we produce, you know, the spiritual realm. No, it's already there. But by service, then one is able to obtain seeing it to or appreciate it.
And at the same time, show it to others, like reveal it to others.
Reveal it to others, but yeah, one can reveal what one sees, but one can only see if one is appreciating that you're not producing that process. By your practicing, you didn't create it. It was already there. Right? The soul already is spiritual. You're just bringing to the point to obtain that. So we'll think, oh, he's materialistic. And so in the mode of passion, we'll think there's different kinds of souls. But the point is, no, the souls are already spiritual just by their attachments and, the misconceptions and appearances, the upadis, the identifications. And that covers them. But they're already spiritual. That's why the transcendental person sees all equally. Because they are spiritual, just they don't realize it. Hmm? Although mixed with a tangle of plants, which are impermanent, the indestructible gold and jewels attain purity, kabalam, by being separated from those things. Right? So you may have some nice jewelry and jewels and all that, they fall into the whatever it is, some weeds or in some like that, but they're still the same thing. Just they're entangled. So the process is a matter of just removing what's there. So you're removing what covers what's already there. So you're not producing what's there. You're simply able to take part in the process by which it can be removed so you can see it. That's all. Like when you open the door, it's not that by opening the door that the room was produced. Like that. It means it'll keep Buddhists busy. But, you know, no, it's like that, you know. Because that's the point. Is the room actually there when the door is closed? If you're not open, is there actually a living room there, you know? Yeah, but that's what you're looking. So how do you know?
What if you turn off the light?
Mean?
In the room, and you're in the room. Is it there?
Is it there? Depends on if you bump into it or not. Like that. But you understand? So these are the things that they get stuck on. So all these problems means they all think that it's because of my consciousness I created it, right? And the materialist or the fruit of worker will think because of my work I created it. So these contaminants of karma and jnana, it'll think because I'm doing something, either grossly or subtly, I produced it. But it's being pointed out here. No, it's always been there. It's by taking part in the process, you're able to realize that it's always been there. And that process, since you're realizing it's been there, because it removes the other things, so there's no need of that process, the natural position still remains. So now instead of working in the reflection, now you work in the original. Right? So there's a process to get you out of the reflection into the original. But always remember, the reflection is reflecting the original. So the original was always there. You know, or let's give another example that we're used to. Cleaning the mirror of the mind, right? So the mirror is dirty. You can't see yourself. So the process, and so you take a rag and, you know, you rub it on the mirror. So there's a process. So now by removing the dust, then you're able to see yourself in the mirror, right? So then two things are there. It's not that by rubbing on the mirror you produced your face. No, it was already there before that process. And once the face is produced, what's saying that the need for the cloth and that rubbing, technique is not required, it still doesn't mean that now everything goes away. No, your face is there. You understand? Like that.
Like a Buddhist, they say that their process only has minors.
Only?
Only minors, no plus.
Yes, because they're dealing with the getting rid of the negative, but they don't know what's the positive. That's the point. But the point is you're talking about harmony, right? Balance. That's what you're trying to do, is the perfect balance. So if there's perfect balance, if you're getting rid of negative, that means there must be positive. Otherwise, how is there a balance? Otherwise, nirvana and, you know, whatever would be hell, in between would be the middle path, right? But if they're saying, no, we're following the middle path, that means it's the path between the negative and the positive. So that means there's positive. So Krishna's saying here, once you attain to that state of balance, then at that point, then you can deal with the spirit, because it doesn't go away. So it's not that, okay, you pull that in and pull this in, because that's not the position. The one is a reflection of the other. At this particular time, there is generally the attainment of prema bhakti in its complete form, rather than the other fruit, sayujya. Thus the phrase param bhakti also indicates prema bhakti in this verse. So what he's saying here is for the devotees, when they come to the stage of liberation, then sayuja is not the position. Then it's a matter of then they'll come to prema bhakti. Right? So that's why we'll use the term Brahma-Bhuta. It means being on the transcendental platform, but we distinguish Brahma-Bhuta meaning that you understand Krishna. While mukti simply means you've freed yourself from the material energy, right? While Brahma-Bhuta indicates that you're situated in transcendence, and now there'll be continued activity. Verse 55 describes the result of attaining devotion. Only by devotional service can one understand Krishna as he is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one is in full consciousness of Krishna by such devotion, he can enter into Krishna's abode, Srila Prabhupada explains.
After attainment of the Brahma-Bhuta stage of freedom from material conception, devotional service begins by hearing about the Lord. When one hears about the Supreme Lord, automatically the Brahma-Bhuta stage develops, and material contamination, greediness, and lust for sense enjoyment disappears. As lust and desires disappear from the heart of a devotee, he becomes more attached to the service of the Lord. And by such attachment, he becomes freed from material contamination. In that state of life, he can understand the Supreme Lord. After the process of bhakti or transcendental service continues. Actual liberation is getting free from misconceptions of life. So here he says actual liberation and then liberation. So we see here that liberation is used, you know, very specifically, that it means that it's transcendental, but there's also the element of being transcendental and understanding one is. Right? So therefore we're very specific about position of liberation of the Brahma Bhuta, but at the same time as we're not enamored by it. Right? The impersonalists, they're enamored by it. So they think it's something very special, very lofty goal. But actually, as soon as you chant, you've been freed from all material contamination. Right? So technically you're liberated. Right? But we tend to think still in the same way. We still have the same misconceptions and same identifications. Because that's consciousness. Right? But our existence has been purified. Right? Here, what did he say? Okay, when he hears about the Supreme Lord, automatically the Brahma-Bhuta stage develops. Right? So that means, as soon as you hear about it, it's automatically going on. And material contamination, greediness, and lust for sense enjoyment disappears. So that will go away by that process. Right? As lust and desires disappear from the heart of the devotee, he becomes more attached to the service of the Lord. By such attachment, he becomes free from material contamination. Right? So Brahma-Bhuta has already been introduced before one has actually been freed from all material contamination. Because the problem is we still identify with it. So therefore, we'll still do the activities that involve ourselves. In that state of life, he can understand the Lord. Actual liberation is getting free from misconceptions of life. So therefore, he said Brahma-Bhuta, but actual Brahma-Bhuta is when one's completely free. But it starts from when one first comes in contact. Does that make sense? So you'll notice a difference in how those from the spiritual platform, from the spiritual, when they talk about these things, they just put it in a nice balance. They're not enamored by anything, right, except Krishna. So they're able to put, so for them, you know, your swarup has already started when you heard, I'm servant of Krishna, because that's the principle. Then you have a particular detail of a general rasa, and then you have a very specific of who you are in that rasa. You understand? But it still starts with the principle of I'm servant of Krishna. So they see like that. And then you have to adjust with this, that I'm servant of Krishna. And so then you take up the practices, you become, you know, more absorbed, you have that knowledge, you're able to get that proper direction. Right? And so then, like this, then you're being situated better. Right? Then, because of understanding your position and Krishna position, then you start to think about Krishna. Right? So, as we were discussing, you know, earlier, is that there'll be times when it's more focused and other times when it'll be more distracted. So, the processes of the focus, that's good. You can improve the quality of that by focusing more. Right? By more, you know, proper understand, focusing meaning. You understand who Krishna is, your relationship with him, how to, and your process you're using to serve him. Right? And the goal to please him. So, that's there, but the point that where one forgets, that's more of the difficulty. Right? So, therefore one is connecting those to the Lord. And those are the process of connecting what distracts you to the Lord. That's called karma yoga, jnana yoga, and jnana yoga. Or combined as buddhi yoga. Right? But still, that pure bhakti is beyond that connection. Right? Because you're connecting what is distracting you. So the pure devotion means it's being what you're doing is simply to please Krishna. Right? So then, if that's the case, then those same activities that were before karma, jnana, and jnana yogas now become pure devotional service. Because before, these are your distractions. You're connecting to Krishna. Now they're not distractions. They're simply the nature that you have to use in this environment. So then it's pure devotion. You understand? It started from the other side. You started from the consciousness of Krishna and then engaged your nature. In other words, you're starting from your nature, the distractions of it, connecting that to Krishna. You understand? When you're sitting down and chanting japa, we don't say that's karma yoga. You know, you're giving class, we don't say that's jnana yoga. Some devotees mistake this, but that's not. Or you're absorbed in thinking of the deity, we don't think that's jnana yoga. No, that's bhakti. That's pure devotional service. So karma, jnana, and jnana yogas are specifically when you're engaging distractions. Right? But the point is all those activities of the distractions, where did those distractions come from? Why are they distractions? They're reflections of the of activities of the spiritual world that we see opportunities for sense gratification in. Right? As opposed to seeing opportunities for devotional service. When you see them as opportunities for sense gratification, then you dovetail that in Krishna's service. Therefore, it's called Buddha Yoga. When you see it as opportunities for devotional service to please Krishna, it's just called devotional service. Right? But Buddha Yoga is in pursuance of pure devotional service, so therefore it's called devotional service. Does that make sense? Cutting vegetables and washing pots is also called cooking, even though technically it's not cooking. Cooking starts when you put the vegetables in the pot. But because it's in pursuance of that, it's called cooking. Right? You know, someone says, hey, where is this devotee? Oh, he's in the kitchen cooking. You open the door and he's there, you know, cutting vegetables. You go, hey, he's not cooking. He's cutting vegetables. Right? No, it's the whole, you understand? So therefore it's called, but still we see Krishna makes these definitions because there is farther and farther levels, because you're trying to get to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that interaction with Him in that devotion. Him as a person, you as a person, Him as a person. So the mechanics are being used because one doesn't identify as a person, one identifies as dead matter. You understand? You know when we say, we're not this body, so therefore, you know, we should be able to do anything. But what does that mean? What is going to do that anything? The soul? No, the body. So you're identifying with the body. That's the misconception. That's upadis. Very subtle. You know what I'm saying? You know, all this, you know, you understand all these different things of I can do anything, I don't have to follow the rules or freedoms or rights. These are all based on misconceptions and upadis. You know, I didn't get an opportunity, so things are not equal, so we should do it like this. That's a misconception. You understand? And that I should be able to do this, that's an upadi. You know, so I'm going to do this. I'm doing this now. That's an upadi. No, it's just we're taking part as an instrument. Is this making some sense here? So in other words, we're trying to see how there's a non-difference but a difference between the process of Bhuti Yoga and this Brahma Bhuta platform where they're talking about pure devotion here. Right? Because if it's in pursuit of pure pleasing Krishna, even when it hasn't come to that state, it still has those qualities of pure devotion. Right? So we always see that there's perfection, there's supreme perfection. Right? Then we have the element of being situated in a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. So we're always going through all these different things. There's a material situation, then there's good material situation, or better material situation. Then there's the transcendental position. Then there's being properly situated in that. Then there is being situated in this, understanding one's relationship with the Lord. Then there's the point of being able to function within that relationship. So you have all these levels, right? So that's why we don't get too distracted by piety in the material world, all these good niceties that are here, because that's just normal, of course. That's what you're, it means you're going to pick your best tools, so you would use good qualities. Why you'd use bad qualities? And, you know, you're supposed to be freed from material contamination, so you're going to, that's the better position. Right? So, how are you saying? Functioning with those good qualities in connection to Krishna, seeing oneself as a servant of Krishna, not the material conceptions, that's just proper situation. You know what I'm saying? Then this is what happens. If you're outside, you know, you want to cook, and you're standing outside, then you don't make a big deal about, you know, taking off your shoes, washing your hands and mouth and feet, and then walking into the kitchen. You know? And then once you get in there, then, yeah, that's it, yeah, you know, and all this kind of stuff like this. You know? Yeah, it's not like that. No, now you start cooking. That's the real thing. So, therefore, all the good qualities of this world, all the, freedom from material entanglement, that's just to get you into the place so you can do bhakti. Does this make sense? Does this kind of put all the whole things in perspective? Like that? Yeah.
What is called Buddhi Yoga, the term, it means it's up to the Brahma Bhuta, or it's up to Prema, that we call it.